Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Abraham Randall, host of Blog Talk Radio. We have back with us today a special guest, Mr. Gerald Bowling, Chief Executive Officer and founder of Bridges for Change, a reentry community inclusion organization, powering and enhancing the lives of minors, adults, and family members in the communities, as well as in the penal system. This organization provides positive modification, management, and related supportive services to meet the needs of the clients. So I'm going to introduce once again Gerald Bowling. And Gerald, are you on with us?
Yes, I am, Leona. How are you doing today? How are you doing, family?
Good. I want to thank you once again for coming back on with us, and I'd like to have you introduce yourself to the audience for those who did not hear and learn about your organization the last time you were on. So if you can, please introduce yourself to the audience once again.
Yes, I can. My name is Gerald Bowling. I have an organization called Bridges for Change. And what it does is a mentoring program for ex-offenders, the youth, and other community residents that we're finding out who need help for homelessness and substance abuse. So we take care of a range of these things through mentorship. We help you get employment, and I'm not talking about at McDonald's or anything like that. Career employment. So we've been working with a group called the Science Center here in Philadelphia, and what we have done, we have tweaked their program called the BUD program, the BALL program. And I'll send on Leona a flyer of that. And this actual program actually shows you how to work in the lab and all the things that you need to do working in the lab. So that'll be your specific job, you know, and you'll have experience. Because when people come home from jail, the main problem is experience. So they have to take these dead-end jobs and work them until it gets better. And sometimes it doesn't get better, you know. Before it can get better, the temptation has already set in, and now we're back doing the things that we used to do. So in this program that we're trying to work out to further it, people who become a home, they got a year to go. They'll come into the program and learn the program. And then when they come home, they'll step right into the program. So you have a job as soon as you come home. That's what we're working towards now. Any other thing we're doing? We're just trying to support our community down here in Philadelphia right now. There's ton of shootings, ton of crime, I know, throughout the nation. And what we're trying to do in Philadelphia is just get them to listen to us. So for some odd reason, they keep on turning their backs against us. And no matter if we call the mayor, no matter if we talk to a public official, no matter what it is, our ideas, right, are still left on the shelf while there's plenty killing here. And they're saying that they don't know what to do about it. However, they then gave out so many millions of dollars to these churches and other institutions just this past year to try to reduce or quell the problem that's going on in this city right here, Philadelphia. And of course, throughout many other cities throughout the nation. So it's like you have to just take this with a grain of salt, I guess, it's sad to see people who don't want to listen to people because they don't have the right letters behind their name or any kind of letters in front or behind their name. So they don't want to listen to you. They don't think that you have the clear-cut knowledge to be giving them who studied all their life about whatever they studied about. And I just say it's a sad thing It's a sad day in the world when people look down on people for no apparent reason. If you don't know what to do, right, you'll go to somebody and ask them how to do it, right? That only seems like the right thing to do, right? These people have been fighting gun violence, and we've been fighting gun violence in our community since 1985, when I started, right? Because I've seen a lot of my friends killed. I've seen a lot of my friends OD. So, like, you know, and I was part of the ruckus. So I wanted to stop being part of the ruckus. I wanted something different for our people because we were being treated unfairly back then. You know, back then I couldn't get a job. And guess what? I still can't get a job. It's 2022. Since 1985, unable to get employment. Because they called me a habitual offender. They called me a thief because I like stealing and robbing. I used to like stealing and robbing from people. And that's what I was taught. If I was taught different, then maybe I could do different. Until I was actually taught different, then I started to do different. So, you know, this is with anybody. So these are the things that we're trying to set up and do. But however, we need y'all guys back. You know what I mean? We need y'all guys to come to the table with us and help us call this, because this is the only way it's going to stop. That's through us, not nobody else.
Can I respond to some of the things you're saying? I wanted to, because what you're saying is very true. One of the things that I've noticed is organizations that have been around for a while, and a lot of them do nothing, but they get a lot of funding because they've never been in prison. They've never had any connection to prisons other than claiming that they want to help prisoners. People are getting monies and funding for their organizations, and I can name some of them that have denied prisoners help. It's been an ongoing situation. Even in Old Colony Correctional Center, right here in Massachusetts, prisoners, the Lifers Group, wrote a letter, and they sent it out to politicians, letting them know that Prisoner Legal Services for years has been making all kinds of excuses. So a lot of these people trying to get help are not getting it. They focus on helping those that they know are going to be connected so that they're going to get the attention, and they spend a lot of time in the media. But a lot of people are being denied help. So, but they're getting funding. But their excuse for not helping prisoners is that a lot of prisoners is that they don't have the funding or the manpower. Now, there was a coalition that was started with the funding, with donation from the sentencing project to start this coalition about life, to abolish life without parole. I was supposed to be in that coalition. But because I've been spending so much time trying to seek lawyers, that I haven't been able to get on to be a part of it. But yet, this particular organization had at one time had almost 7 lawyers from their organization in this coalition. You only need one person from each organization to represent each organization. You don't need a whole lot of lawyers. So this is why a lot of prisoners are not getting the help that they need. And yet my organization, just like yours, Gerald, and many others, we have investments in helping and trying to prevent incarceration. And yet, we don't get the funding. I haven't actually tried to get funding, but now it's getting to the point where I am considering. But at the same time, I remember there was a beat-up building, an old building with the windows broken and everything, in Brockton, Massachusetts. And I tried to get that donated to us because I felt that the incarcerated that are being released, the people, the homeless people, and others could help with the renovation of this huge, huge building, which was big enough to have rooms for these individuals, plus offices, plus a gym, plus a place where they could have substance abuse treatment, where they could have mental health treatment, all of these things. And that building, I tried to get that building in 2004. And here we are in 2022. That building is still sitting in Brockton, still with the windows busted out, and people are still in the streets. So I think it's very imperative for people to know what you're saying, Gerald, means a lot, because it's people like you that know exactly what's needed for these people coming out of prison. for somebody like you that knows exactly what's going on in the streets of Pennsylvania. And those are the ones that should get the funding, audience. Those are the ones that should get the help. Those are the ones that should get volunteers to work with them in the work that they're trying to do. Because Gerald Bowling has a passion for what he's doing. He has a passion for what he's doing. And sometimes it takes some funding to help. But his thing about coming on is not so much about the funding. It's about his passion to help others. So please, I am sorry to interrupt you, Gerald, but I needed to say that because it's all too often, people are suffering and they're getting denied. ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, another one. They have all this on their website that they help with civil rights violations, and yet they have denied. I have been, even when I was in Pennsylvania in 2007, when those prisoners were alleged to have committed suicide, I contacted the ACLU in Pennsylvania several times, and after each time I called them, to no avail, another prisoner was committing suicide. But they were alleging that they were being abused. So we don't know if it was actually suicide or by the guards, the prison officials, or whom. But those three individuals died because not intervened.
I can help you with that. I was in Siberia, and I heard two people get killed. And the first one, he was fighting them. They opened up his cell. They sprayed him down with water. They opened up all the windows, and you heard a man going from a strong voice to a weak voice to silence. And then, you know, the state police had to come in and remove his body because, you know, they got to take pictures of somebody die in the prison cell. So the next one was a brother was in there fighting. So he hung himself. But the thing of it is how strong he was. Y'all won't believe how strong this guy is, right? His handcuffs was behind his back. He had a broken back, and then he pulled himself up and hung himself. Right? He pulled himself up and hung himself. That was the whole thing going around. Cause you can hear him talking, even though when they try not to be, you know, the whole. If anybody been in the hole, you know that you can hear people talking the whole, especially when it's real quiet. So they was trying to be real quiet about it. You know what I mean? But they couldn't be. So, like, you know, we can keep on trying to fight these people one on one, try to fight them with a group here, the group there. They don't care. Right? So we have to know that from the door. They do not care. Right, and we have to care, and that means that we have to get off our little cells, get out our chairs, get off our behinds, get up, start calling people, writing people. You know, even if you don't have a loved one that's in there, if you know somebody that's in there, send them a letter, because that's what they're looking for. Most of the people that they kill, and I'm going to say most of the people, don't get any visits or don't get mail. So they know somebody on the outside don't care nothing about you, and they will kill you. I don't know how any other, you know, jail system is, because I was only in one, and that's Pennsylvania, the state. But, you know, y'all can just look it up. In 1989 or 90, they were building a jail called Smithville, and that was next to Huntington. And they found 300 body parts or bodies out there. So you can just Google that, and that'll tell you what you're dealing with. You know what I mean?
That's the one. We held a protest outside SCI Smithville. We also had a at the Capitol Rotunda in Harrisburg, we also had a rally there. And that was the one where those three ended up dying. And that was Joe Kappa, Joe Hoquin, and Clifford Finney, three people that died in Pennsylvania, trying to get help for them in Pennsylvania back then. And the same thing, like you said, if people do not visit prisoners, if they do not have any, if prisoners don't have any communication with anybody, those are the ones they target too.
Yeah. Yeah, they will target you no matter what they say. You know, my situation, like I was in solitary, everybody talk about solitary confinement. And that's a bad thing. It's a bad place to be, especially how they were giving people, you know, life sentences in there. But that's a terrible thing what they've done to him in there. But so many people that's in there, like, for beating guards up and everything, 10, 20 years and all this sort of stuff. Like, you know, at some point, there has to be a community prisoner liaison. At some point, not no counselor. Did you hear it? Community prison liaison. That means the person that comes from the community will come inside the jail, right, and get these people prepared for life. Because guess what? They're not prepared for life in there. Right? They don't want to prepare you to go home. They want you to stay right there with them so they can have a job. Right? So that's why, you know, drugs can run rampant. That's why, you know, they put the cable box in there and took out the typewriter. So took out the law book. And made law, going to the law library like, you know, pulling teeth, you know, because they don't want you to care about you. They know what they're doing with some of these laws. They know that one first time offenders shouldn't receive life sentences. You know what I mean? In many cases, unless it was a horrible thing. You know what I mean? But, you know, it's all about right now, right? Trying to regroup in our own community, right? The focus can't be just on jail. The focus has to be on these kids. And I'm talking about not no high school, just the high schoolers. I'm talking about preschool, elementary. I mean, we have to go down this far to change the mindset. We have to go down this far to show some love, because if we don't, then we'll keep producing what's being produced now. I mean, if anybody look up the numbers from 1985 to this date right here, black on black crimes and murders, it'll be astounding to you, as it was to me. That's why I don't even care about the number, because one is too much. You know? So like, I understand what they're doing out here, and I understand how we can't trust nobody, but you have to trust somebody. You know what I mean? And I don't want to come out and say, like, you need to support us, but you do. You need to support what we're doing. You know what I mean? Because it has to start somewhere. Right? So if it starts in Philly, then it can start anywhere else. You know what I mean? This is the cradle of bullshit. It's not a brotherly love. It's a bullshit. You know? This is the place where all the liars come at. You know what I mean? This is the place where they think of some more lies to tell on top of the lies that they tell. You know? And it derails you to not give you any opportunities. That's why they look at Philly and say, oh wow, Philly look like New York now. Philly looks like New York. And guess what? Everybody who's low income in Philadelphia has nowhere to go. Right? If you're on Section 8. If you're trying to move somewhere, there's nowhere to go. They just now had a building in Logan, the facade cracked on it, so the facade came off the top of it. The people said that the places that they're putting them is in so deplorable condition, right? But if they don't take that, right, then they'll be homeless on the street. And these people pay for where they live at. So you see what I'm talking about? There has to be, right, some humanity cut out for us, right? We shouldn't we want to turn it up every day, every weekend, whatever, spending our money on their devices, while in real life, right, with a real life crisis, they putting us in the slums, in pig slums. Why? Because we don't have nothing. Why? Because obviously we don't want nothing. That's how they think. So like, if we wanted something, right, then we'll have a place for some people to go, if in an emergency, right? They won't even let them go to the Red Cross and stay. Now they let people go to the Red Cross and stay. They won't even let them stay there. But they built all these Red Cross fallout shelters. Who are they for?
You know, I'm actually one for networking. You know that, Gerald. And the thing is with me is I try to network. I even, like I say, with Prison Legal Services and others, they're like children sometimes, because if they don't like something that you're saying or doing or whatever, they're like children. They try to get everyone to turn everyone against you, to try to turn everyone against your organization. And what we could be doing if we had professionals that may have differences, we all have differences, but at the same time, it's like siblings. I network with people around the country. I've networked with a lot of them, and even abroad. And these people are actually trying to, they want to get connected. So I connect them with others so that they can get familiar with them, so that we can all work together in unity to resolve a lot of these issues. But we cannot solve issues when we sometimes have advocates that are playing at two sides. You know, there was a politician that referred me to PLS. I sent PLS a letter, an email. And I sent them a professional letter, and I sent them an application and a release of information that we had on a client. And if I had CC'd it to the politician that had referred me, I'm sure I would have found this particular executive director of that organization or firm. Because I did that one time a few years back. I sent an email, and I copied to a lot of the politicians, and I got a response right away. But this is how deceptive people can be and organizations can be. So what you're seeing is, and it's not just in Philly, I'm sure that in Pennsylvania you see a lot of these things happening, but also in other states, including Massachusetts. What we need, just like families Against Mandatory Minimum, FAM, has been around for years. They're a national organization. And they have been sending around and encouraging everyone to contact the state and federal the state representatives around the country, the politicians. They have been recommending that everybody call them and try to get them to stop going into the prisons and meeting with the prisoners. Because as long as prisoners are not being met with, the stories are not getting out. And no politician can advocate for criminal justice reform if they don't meet with the people and find out what exactly is going on. The union for the prison, the DOC around the country, the union's so powerful that these people are afraid to go up against the DOC. And they're the ones that are the lawmakers. The legislative members, the lawmakers, should not be afraid to go up against the DOC or to find out more about what's going on inside. And it's just like in the streets. The politicians, the legislative members, also have to know what's going on in the streets and know what is needed in the streets. We need supportive, not only supportive aftercare resources, we need supportive resources in the streets for these people that are homeless. And as I mentioned the other day, these homeless people, sometimes if they go into a homeless shelter, they get a roof over their head at night, but they have to be out first thing in the morning. Mm-hmm. And they're on the street. They're either hanging out on the streets or they're drinking on the streets, and they can't get back into the shelter because they've had alcohol on them. But what they need to do while these people are in these homeless shelters, they need to bring volunteers or professionals in during the day to talk to these people, to try to help them get jobs and try to help them get treatment and everything else. But it's like the taxpayers' dollars are going into these homeless shelters only to put a roof over their head at nighttime. but not to rehabilitate them during the day. These are issues that need to be addressed. What you're doing right now is not only, like you say, the reentry and the community inclusion, bringing people together to empower and enhance the lives of these people, but you should be getting a lot of support from legislative members, from people in the community that have so much to say about these homeless people and about these prisoners. They want to see change. They don't want to participate. They don't want to be a part of it. They want to judge. It's like the abortion, you know, abolishing abortion. People can't have abortions. But yet, what happens when these babies grow up and they mess up and they're in the streets or they're in the prisons? Where are these so-called protesters and these people that are so desperate to enter into everybody's lives to tell them what to do and what not to do, when these people that they force these people, parents, to have are now needing them? These people are nowhere to be found because they're too busy judging.
Yeah, well, that's what they want. You know what I mean? You know, you always going to make money off of prison. They talk that crap all they want to. You always going to make money off of prison. There's always some grant money for a prison. You mean for their side. For us, we gotta show them that we can do it. We just gotta show them that this and that and the other. I can actually send you the email where they actually use my plan and they're actually using my plan and now, you know, they don't give me anything for it. Nothing for it. Like I did that just to help them. I did that to help my people and the people who were in a condition like I was, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't, you know, look out for me. And that's the thing. We do so many things because we want to help so bad because the situation is so bad that we forget about ourselves. You know what I mean? So it's really crazy.
Yeah, everybody's out for themselves and they don't. A lot of people look at. I had been circulating too, America United internationally. I spoke to Zena Crenshaw, who told me I became a member, my loved one and I, and it was $50 for the two. But she directed me to Louisiana United internationally. So I'm wondering what happens now when people are advertising America United internationally, when all the funding monies memberships are going to one particular state that we are not connected with in any way. So that's another thing I have a concern with, because misguidance, being misled, and there's a lot of that that goes on as well in the community and around the country.
Yeah.
It's like
the
cycle that needs to be broken.
Yeah, well, only way we're going to break the cycle is we break. You know what I mean? Like all your listeners, get on. You know, start a petition. You know what I mean, what do you want to see in your community? If you want to keep seeing the same old thing, then it's the same old thing will be happening. You know what I mean, you got to get people stop fighting against each other and stop pulling out a gun as the answer, as the answer to all. You know what I mean, just because you're having a spat with somebody, that don't mean you got to pull out a gun. You know what I mean, talk about it. You can't talk about it. You know, then do what we had to do like we were young. You know, slap box or fight about it. And then it's over with. Y'all can call it a day. You don't have to walk around with so much hatred that you just want to kill somebody. You don't like somebody, but you're gonna put yourself in jail for the rest of your life for them, though. What sense does that make?
They need to do away with it.
You give up your whole life for somebody that you say that you don't like.
They need to do away with weapons. They need to do away with guns. Guns didn't exist in the very beginning. You know, the NRA is making a fortune. And this is why a lot of these people in politics do not want to abolish the guns, because they're making a fortune. And I sometimes believe that some of these guns are being sold to the wrong people purposely, because I sometimes think that we are going to be having a lot of domestic violence going on and terrorism in the United States. I see it coming just in the way things are going on. And that's why they don't want to get rid of the guns.
We already got a lot of domestic terrorism. It's
exactly.
Us. The police killing us. Is the police shooting us down? Is us killing us? That's enough terror right there. We're talking about domestic shit. That's enough right there. We've been killing ourselves since early in the 80s. Really heavy. Nobody don't care. That's supposed to have been a health epidemic. People running around killing themselves. But don't you know that's a mental health crisis? People just don't shoot people down that look like them. We the only people who do it. It ain't hard.
Mental health, a mental health issue, and also a racist issue. We have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses. We have an epidemic of addiction, and we have an epidemic of racism in this country. And you talk about a petition. I started a petition a year and a half ago to abolish prisons. We replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities for both for drugs and alcohol, and also mental illnesses. There's about almost 700 signatures, but with 2.3 million people in prisons and jails, you would have thought there would have been over 100,000 signatures. We have these families that complain, their loved ones are incarcerated, their loved ones are being abused, their loved ones are in the street, but yet they take no motivation, they take no incentive to even go and sign these petitions, to even volunteer with these organizations trying to make a positive change. And these people, the families desert their loved ones once they go to prison. Families and friends desert them. But these families and friends should ask themselves, what would happen if they had messed up in some way and everybody turned against them without knowing what happened, without trying to find out what happened? How would they feel if everybody just turned against them, which is what a lot of people do, a lot of families and friends, without even getting to the bottom of it or trying to talk to their loved ones or their friends? This happens a lot.
Yeah.
I hate when I hear people complaining, families especially. Families should be the first ones there for their loved ones. I hate when I hear people complaining about the system and the way it's the injustices and everything, and yet do nothing because they think everybody else is going to do it for them.
Yeah, that's why I got to bring Dr. Palmer on here, because, like, you know, this man is my elder, right? And I heard about him and everything like that, right? But I was still in my criminal element. I wasn't trying to do right. But, like, when I started doing right, I wanted to catch up with him so bad, but I never could. So I finally did, and then I started finally getting to know this man. And I learned, like, who is he with? He was with all these the original Panthers, Martin Luther King, his idol was Paul Robeson. I mean, this man been out here for 70 years fighting racial injustice. You ever heard of Made in America? I guess they promote it so much across the country, right? So the Made in America tour that comes here in Philadelphia, right? With this guy, Jay-Z, and all these people coming there. That's actually what Dr. Palmer done. That's actually, it's actually the original name of it is the Black Bottom Unity Day. That's the neighborhood I'm from. I'm from the Black Bottom. So the Black Bottom is not just a neighborhood for you know, gang war and that like that. It's a old neighborhood of black folks, of natives who've been here forever, right? And whose neighborhood came and got took by University of Penn, Drexel, the city, the state, what's the other school? The hospital, Penn Hospital, Presbyterian Hospital, all these different places. That came and just took one community because it was so close to everything. It's close to the water. So, you know, Indians just to stay close to the water, right? So they came, it was nothing but farmland here too. So, I mean, the history go back so far, but, you know, just coming from where Dr. Palmer and them came from, where they would actually bulldoze out their house that same morning. They had Dr. Palmer and them being young, had to go out there and sit and stand in front of the bulldozers right? So they wouldn't tear down the buildings while their families were trying to get out. You know what I mean? So you talk about a brother that's been through something and that can teach somebody something, you know, is right there. And what I have learned dealing with him and dealing with others, right? People just don't want to listen, right? Number one. Number two is that they think they know it all, right? And they may know a lot, right? But they haven't fought in these battles to be inside, right? So like, you know, you could be a fan of boxing, right? And never fought a day in your life, right? And when somebody talk about inside boxing and outside boxing and, you know, this, that, and the other, you get lost because you only see a fight. You don't know that there's different levels to this thing, right? And this is the same thing happening with us. So here in Philly, right, we have a little committee, right? And it's called Black Bible Tribe Community Committee, right? So I have a guy, he's from up your way. His name is Darian Baldwin. Dr. Darian Baldwin. Hello? Yes. So he's a really good guy. He's real knowledgeable and everything. So we got him. He's been working for us for over a year now. We have another guy named Eric Williams. He has a dual degree. He graduated out of University of Penn, and he's a lifelong friend of mine, and also he graduated from Harvard, and now he's a civil rights attorney working in D.C. He's trying to come up and get his practice done here. We have another guy that I met in 2017, a Jewish guy. His name is Edward Epstein. And when I met him, he was just trying to get his dissertation to become a doctor. With our help, and also with the help of Dr. Palmer, he was able to talk to the elders who have fought the University of Penn and Drexel all their lives. And one lady named Ms. Cora Hill, she's 102. I'll send you the tape, Leona. She wasn't on a meeting or anything like that, but her daughter was. The elders there, and which was a big surprise to me. I was really surprised, and I'm really honored that they asked me and asked the Black Bottom Tribe to take over one of the longest black, or whatever you want to, I don't like calling myself black, but community reunions in Philadelphia. So what happened to this community, that it was totally destroyed by the University of Penn. You can there's some articles and one of them is called Pennification. So you can look at that, and that'll give you an outline of what the people at Penn done, especially this actor's son, not the actor's father. Sorry. I guess you guys, y'all heard of the guy Kevin Bacon. So Kevin Bacon's father's name is Edwin Bacon. So Edwin Bacon was the city planner. So him and the University of City's president at the time named Hartrath, with some more city officials, came in and took all the money out the city school district, right? And place it in their school district so their money can grow, and we suffer in our community with school books and everything, right? So like, you know, there was a deliberate plan to do what they've done now and to have what they have now in this community, and I don't care what they say. You know, attention, right? Drug attention, right? So
yeah.
it was this guy, right? Named Larry Lavin, right? He's a University of Penn student, and he's a University of Penn grad, and he was a University of Penn doctor, right? Of dentistry, right? You might have read his book called Dr. Coke or whatever his name is supposed to be, right? So this guy was selling dope in our community, right? Like big time cocaine, right? Now I was young, but I would walk the people who are a little bit older than me over there to the dentistry, right, where they would go pick up all their stuff at, right? And I mean, it was a gang of people out there, right? So there's no reason or no way in hell that they didn't know that this boy was doing something illegal. You understand? Because it's right on 40th Street. And 40th Street was wide open. That's when they had these cops out here. And then you can look back in that decade or in that time, and you can look up a crime that they say this wild bunch committed a crime on 40th and Chestnut, and they killed somebody there. So you can look all this stuff up and know that it's real. To me, I think that the University of Penn, and I'm quite sure, this guy, I want to get this guy to talk to this guy, but I believe they knew he was selling coke. And I knew that, and I think that they knew that by him putting that coke in our neighborhood, you know, they were trying to destroy us from the inside out. And they did a good job. But they haven't killed all of us. And that's the thing. And furthermore, with all of that, and the reason why I think that way is because I know you guys probably heard about the Move Bones that they've been, you know, circulating across the country and showing off to other people and everything else when they had no permission to do so. They just took their bodies and did it what they wanted to with them. And then just on the heels of that, they got 300 body parts now that they can't identify now. So not just with that theory with this guy Larry Lavin, but years ago the elders would tell everybody, do not go down near the school, because the school was like, you know, down on 32nd Street, 34th Street, near Spruce Street. It wasn't all over, because it was people. They said don't go down that way at nighttime, because, you know, somebody from the university is going to snatch you and take you, and we'll never see you again. So that was a rumor going on, right? So now fast forward to 2021, 22. Now they purportedly going around the whole world with these people bodies from the Move incident that happened in 1985. They got 300 body parts that they can't find, they can't identify. They trying to say they come from other places. This, that, and the other. So this university has a lot of mystery behind it. A lot of mystery, right? So we know we can't uncover it all, but we're trying to get, we're fighting for, and I need to let Dr. Farmer talk more about this than me, but we're fighting for our reparations with that, because he's an expert. I wasn't even born when he was fighting. So, you know, I don't want to, you know, give you anything that I really can't tell you on. So, like, during the 80s and, like, the middle part of the 70s, where I know I was here and could understand, I could tell you about that. But, like, from the 30s and 40s and 50s, I only can tell you from what I heard or from what I read and from what Dr. Palmer tells me. You know what I mean? So, I like, as long as he's here, he can talk for himself. So, I want to try to bring him on as soon as possible so he can, you know, start to try to get, you know, some substance to y'all at first. You know, so y'all understand where we're coming from, and then also some backing from y'all, because we're fighting racism. But this happens all through the campus. At one point, and this is the craziest thing I ever heard. At one point, this lady was talking to me, and I'll send the owner her biography that she sent to me. Right, she said that they had a school called the Motivational School that they had in West Philadelphia, right, for black kids, you know, trying to get them in college and everything. So the University of Penn said, yeah, we'll accept them people in here, right? So when they accept them in there, right, they told them all to get out. The teacher who was there told them that they couldn't teach them because they black. He didn't even want to talk to them. And then the University of Penn Act ended up kicking them all out of the school. Right? Nothing, just because they were black. just because they were black. And this is a white lady telling this story. She said she never saw it in her life, and then she went up into Cambridge, Massachusetts, and ended up building a school up there through the same principle. You know what I mean? So what I'm trying to tell you, like, we need y'all help. You know what I mean? We're a community that has been decimated, displaced, and guess what? They don't even give a hell. I don't know if y'all heard about it, but it's this place called the Townhouse out here in Philly that people were protesting against and everything of that nature. The Townhouse is derived from Dr. Palmer and them work from when they were bulldozed out of 3600 Market Street, 30 to 3800 Market Street, where I told you they were bulldozed out that same day. Come to find out that the university, science center, the city, and all of them, right, were talking to Dr. Palmer and them about making, you know, three plots of land for affordable housing so people can still stay down there, right? So somehow they finagled it, got away from that, ended up selling it to this guy named Altman, who sits on Drexel's board of directors, right, for $1, right? They sold this big pot of land to this guy for $1, right? On top of that, he got a contract with HUD to build low-income housing for HUD representatives for 40 years. They were going to stay there for 40 years, which they did. And then after that, he had time to renew or not renew, right? Sounds good, right? But mm-hmm. Don't you think that, right? His organization, Mr. Altman's organization, right? His father and them built the houses that the people were going to live in. They built them shabby as shit, for one. It's still like a backed up sewage smell the whole 40 years they've been there, right? And they managed the property, getting all the rent from there. So they have a trifecta right there. They bought it for $1. They got paid by HUD to build the place. And then HUD paid them to house these people. Right? However, this land was in negotiations with the Black Bottom to have affordable housing for the people that they bulldozed out their house. So the quick move with the city was, because none of the Black Bottom members, or most of them, didn't even know what was going on, the city went ahead and placed whoever they felt like it in those places because there wasn't no agreement. So when you talk about racism, when you talk about defiling or making mental health issues, right? You talk about drugs in our community, right? You talk about ownership, right? We don't own nothing in our community, right? The first thing the Chinese people come and do is open up a deli selling chicken, fries or whatever. And what we do, oh man, fuck them, I ain't going in there, and we become lifelong patrons of this. We give a fuck more about Mama Mary or Ching Yang Ho than we give a fuck about our own parents, our own people, our own uncle. We'll sit out there all day and buy dollar cans of beer, but we will never say, hey man, y'all don't belong here. They give nothing to our community. Nothing. Not a daggone thing.
You know what I'd like to say? One of the things is, a lot of times, I'm sure the audience is probably saying, oh, every time we listen, we're hearing about racism. I want everybody to know everything that's happening in this country around prison reform, around prison issues, around community issues, it all has to do with racism, because we are in a crisis situation throughout this country of not only being hated by many people, Caucasians, not only being hated by a lot of them. I mean, we know there's a lot of you out there who would love to work with us and respect us and everything. But we have a majority of not only Caucasians that hate helping people of color with businesses or organizations or whatever, but we also have our own people sometimes who are our worst enemies. And they are the ones that are used in political positions because they are the ones that are controlled by the Caucasian races. Unfortunately, this recently happened with me. Now, I made a phone call about a week or two ago, to an aide with one of the politicians. And because, now see, when you have somebody inside and you also have an organization, they will respect somebody that has an organization that doesn't have anybody inside, because I'm still waiting for that call. I'm waiting for the call from both the legal services, and I'm waiting for a call from this politician's aide. But sometimes we don't get the respect that they give others because they are racist. When I was in Ghana, West Africa, I had a young man tell me, the lighter you are in their country, the more respect you get. I was standing in line at a store, and this woman that was not from Ghana, a white woman, was yelling at this young man behind the register. She was yelling at him, calling him names, everything. And he didn't say anything. And finally, I turned around and I said, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are talking to him like that? When I said that, she knew I was from the States, because you can tell this Massachusetts accent. You can tell it's not from Africa. And she looked at me, and her face was like stunned. And then she left. And I asked this young man, why do you let people talk to you like that? And he said that sometimes in those countries, the lighter you are, the more respect you get. That's why we have such a problem around the country and around the world with racism, because the lighter you are, the more respect you get. And that happens within our own people that turn against us, or they don't respect us as much because they're getting smiles and pats on the back from the white man. Until we can respect ourselves and our colleagues and our peers of color, this is going to continue on. And it's sad to say it, but we're still facing slavery in America.
Did you see that that's supposed to be king, what he did to that black man? He did the same thing them little puppet people did to them people, the little kids at the Sesame Place. He did the same thing.
It's a shame.
And what gets me, right? This what gets me, right? King James, right? It's King James Stewart, right? He's the first and the sixth. He's the only king. He's the only monarch who was ever the first and the sixth, right? So he ran Europe. He ran Ireland. And what's the other? In Scotland. So he's the king of Scotland. Remember that movie Forrest Whitaker made, right? You ever seen it? The King of Scotland?
No.
You ain't never seen the King of Scotland? Okay.
No.
Well, that's what it's referencing to, right? King James Stewart, right, is dark skinned. He was never the person that they depict him to be, right? He's dark skinned. He's the only king who ran Scotland, ran England, and ran in what's that other place they always fight, Ireland. He's the only king that ever done that. That's not their throne. If you look at some pictures, if you go back and look at King Hasali from Ethiopia, right? They used to call him Jesus, right? Remember? He's the Christ or whatever, right? They're bowing down to him. He's not bowing to them at all.
Well, you know, we can also see with the Queen, look at the 2.5 weeks of the same old thing. If people put as much effort and as much love and attention and worshiping into our Creator as they do with a 96-year-old, can you imagine things might be a lot better than they are today?
Yeah, sure.
Everybody has their priorities in order. That's what the problem is in this country.
Listen, I'm going to tell you a little story. My name is Bowling, right? B-O-L-L-I-N-G, right? If you look that name up and you put direct descendant of, right? And you put Pocahontas, right? You know who Pocahontas is, right?
Uh-huh.
So you'll get, I'm a direct descendant of Pocahontas, right? There's white Bowlings and there's red Bowlings, right? The red Bowlings mean Indian Bowlings, right? That's what it's supposed to be, right? So Pocahontas, right, his daughter, her father was the king, right, of the Potawatomi. He was the king of the Potawatomi, right? But also, he was also head of 30 native nations, right? So all that you can look up, right? So, and here in America, these people, right, came over here. She saved them on many occasions, right? When they went to go over there and make the treaty, and this is what I'm trying to find out, with England, right? Because she went as a representative or spokesman for this country to England to talk to the king. After that, whatever happened there, right, she was dead on the sea. Over here, I'm still trying to find out what happened to the Potawatomi, because you don't even hear their name that much. You know what I mean? However, all my family is everywhere. You know, if you look up the Bowlings, you'll see it's all in Virginia. All going all we back over to the other ones, where the Quakers had took the people that they you know, so called captured, and took them all the way over there to Oklahoma. You'll see it, the whole line of it. So when we talk about racism, when we talk about things of this nature, right? You talking about a spirit, right? That's just full of crap. Right, if somebody helps you, right, like she did, she bent over backwards to help you eat. She bent over the backwards to show you how to eat. She showed y'all how to do tobacco, and then y'all take everything away. Everything away. She showed you how to grow it, how to crop it, everything. And what did y'all do? Us who are part of the Potawatomi right now, I know me. I don't even know what's going on. I found out that Pocahontas had her name around the Senate building on the top of the dome. I never knew that, and that's my direct descendant. So. Shouldn't we, as direct descendants, right, be in a better place, right, than what we are now, right? Because the Moors, right, you know, they got special privileges over here. So why shouldn't the Potawatomi have, and why shouldn't the natives have special privileges over here? This is our land. We don't even know it's our land. That's how backwards we don't even know it's our land, and it's our land. This is our land. It's not theirs. They stole it. They took it. But that does not go by the precept of us being native to this land. You see? So I'm fighting on all kinds of levels. I'm fighting on all types of levels. I want to know who my family is. What you do to my family? Where my family at? Why if y'all hate the Potawatomi, why do y'all got my ancestor name written across y'all dome? Why? Tell me where my family at, because y'all know. What did y'all do to my family? What do y'all do to them? I know y'all mass murderers. I do know that. but have enough balls to tell me that you murdered my family. Let me know what happened. Because like none of that sits well with me. None of it. So like when you start talking about America history, you got to put me in it. You got to put my family in it. Our name probably wasn't Bowling, but that's the name that they came up with. Like, you know, the translation. But I'm not doing this research. A guy is doing this research. A guy. And this is what he came up with. It's a Bowling, Alabama. Mm-hmm. It's a Bowling Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm.
My name is not good. It's an old name. We even have a crest. And guess where? Our crest come from England. We have a crest, a Bowling crest. So like when I talk to you, I'm not talking to you out of white and black, because I got white folks in my family too. I'm talking to you from a mindset. Why did you kill my people? Why did my ancestor come over there and she died over there in your shores? Y'all making all this money, making cartoons, making live pictures, making all this stuff. But you say you loved her, but why you kill her? Why are you keeping us away from what's rightfully ours? So I'm going to say again, it's land not yours.
You know, my understanding is the America, this was the last continent to come up from the ocean, from the sea. And one of the things is we didn't come up with a country already built. But we know after every war, there was more coming to the United States. After every war, there was gold coming in. There was diamonds coming in. There was oils, perfumes, and all these wealthy, rich things that built the United States of America. And it came from Africa. It came from the Middle East. It came from places where history began. And it seems like still to this day, America is being built on the blood, sweat, and tears of people of color around the world.
Right.
Countries.
Right. And when is it going to stop? When is it going to stop?
You know, a lot of people of color need to, again, which is something the Native Indians, is something the people like Martin Luther King and Louis Farrakhan or Muhammad or all of these people of color have been trying to bring people of color together. And that has to happen first before anything else can happen. It has to happen. We need to be able to respect ourselves and our brothers and sisters of color, because if you notice, a lot of times, in most cases, the people who are of the Caucasian races, they stick together. And I have been experiencing that for the last 25 years because of the situation, my own situation. And they will stick together. Even if they don't know the person or people they hate, they manage to stick together and they manage to bring down the people that they hate. And this will continue until we ourselves can come together in unity and start respecting ourselves. And we need more role models for these kids in the streets that have their pants hanging down to their behinds. These girls that are wearing skirts that are so above the thighs that they can almost be seen, their privates. These girls that are wearing these low cuts. These girls that are using the vulgar language that they shouldn't use. Because no girl should be using any vulgar language if she wants to be respected We need to respect ourselves, and we need to bring our people together in respect and unity to show everyone that this is what our culture is about. Decency, respect for one another, respect for others. In Africa, when I first went there, everything is so innocent. Everything was so innocent. And they used to say that, I was told that some of these people from America, they go to their country. They go to these countries in Africa, and they act like the white man. They spend all their money in the tourist attractions. They don't go into the villages to learn about their culture, their history. They go to these tourist attractions. They spend their money, and they come back to the United States like the white tourist, like the white man. This is what we're hearing from our own backgrounds, our own histories, about the brothers and sisters that go to their countries acting like they're better than them. And now if you notice, they have all these African Americans going to, I think it's Guyana, going to Guyana, and everyone in the diaspora going to Africa to see what they can get. I hope they're going to go see what they can give. But this is what we have. We need to start respecting ourselves. We need to be role models for those kids in the streets. And not only the people of color, but the white man has to be role models for these kids. And the white man is not being role models for their kids because they're too busy teaching their kids how to hate instead of love.
Yeah.
And that's why this country is so divided.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, I'm going to bring on, I believe it's Joe coming on. Hello? Is it you, Joe?
Hey, Leona. Yeah,
hi.
How you doing?
Good. Do you have anything to
I'm
add
okay.
to the army?
I just got here. I don't know. I just heard you talking. I don't know what the show's about. I just thought I'd come in and say I didn't mean to anger you the other day.
No, you were right.
I'm sorry.
You were right. I have a lot of anger in me. I have a lot of frustration in me, and I wasn't born and raised this way. But throughout the years, I've learned because I've been deceived. You know, I have lost everything because of the lies and deception in this country, and lies and deception. And I was just saying, there's a politician who I watched grow up, and he always says, I'm like a mother to him, and my son is like a brother to him. But yet this young man, now he's a politician, had never even tried to find out what happened to cause us to lose everything, to cause the incarceration for life without parole. Never. But I bet if he was to ask some of his friends what they would do if he was in the place my loved one is in, how they would feel, about him. And this is what we're talking about unity and racism, and we're talking about coming mm-hmm. together. We're talking about all these things. And if we cannot even be loyal to our own peers, we're not going to be loyal to anyone. And unfortunately, we want respect from the white man. We want that respect. And if we can't get it, then we need to unite with our own peers. And this is not happening because our own peers need to start learning what it is. If they want respect from the white man, they need to respect one another first. And we don't have role models out there for these kids today. And that's where that has to begin as well. And Gerald, I'm going to let you finish talking about what you were saying.
Well, I was just basically saying the same thing. Like we have to educate them. You know, they're not educated about who we are, what kind of history we are. Like if I tell people, the black bottom, they'll say, black bottom? What's that? You know, it's a community in West Philadelphia, which had many jazz stars, people down there, such as Grace Kelly, such as Frank Sinatra, you know, coming down there, what's his name, Louis Armstrong, all these different people, like, you know, and Dr. Palmer can tell you best because he played with most of them. Like, you know, This guy's really dynamic. You know, I would like for all of y'all to meet him, so y'all, you know, give him a good look over and see what he's been doing. Like, but like that's all. I remember when I was younger, that's all I used to hear down here is jazz music. All the jazz players used to come down here and play. Now, you know, kids don't know that, and for some odd reason here in Philadelphia, you know, you can't come outside, you can't drive your car, you know, they're trying to kill you for looking the wrong way or saying something to them, and all of this, and it's becoming lawless. And what our mayor said here is that he ready to give up this job because he tired. He never knew what to do, you know. So, like we're just in a bad streets right now, and I'm praying that we can get out of these streets and start getting back to the love that we did have for each other, pre the drug epidemic. So, you know,
I really believe, like I say, this if everyone in America was to come together and try to respect one another and try to work with one another, it would be different. But there's still that division. There's still a lot of Caucasians. There's still a lot of whites that are out there trying to divide. And the best way they know how to divide is to take one culture or one set of people from each culture and make it as though they're best friends, to turn them against the others in their own of their own peers, to turn them against their peers. It happens too often, and I see it happening right here in Massachusetts.
Yeah,
and our people fall for it.
It's happening all around because you know they rather talk than listen. They got a lot of talking going on, and they got a lot of crying going on. They got a lot of putting the blame here and there. But like, you know, the blame should go directly on you. And you and I. Because like we're the ones giving our lives to this. We're the ones you don't want to listen. You know what I mean? So like we have to. We have to start listening.
It happens all the time. You know, and that's the currency of the politician. The politicians, they trade on their lies and their deception in order to get elected. And they do so by telling the electorate what they want to hear. That's what every politician does. Every politician who's in office when they run for re-election, they will always say, "Well, I was the best," or "I am very, very good," and the person coming up, my oppositional candidate, he doesn't know what he's doing. He or she doesn't know what he's doing. Then that particular candidate will say, "That person, the person who's in office already, he hasn't done anything. You need a change." Now, those two messages are the same messages you will hear for every election and re-election in any municipality, for any senator, for any congressman, for any mayor, for any governor. It's always the same. The person in office, they've done such a terrific job. The person who hasn't been in office yet will point the finger of recrimination at the one who's in office and say they haven't done a good job. It's time for a change. That's what I've seen over the years.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. Exactly right. I mean, I get tired of it so much that you know it's just a shame. It's just a shame they lie so much, you know, until people try to believe them, and there's really no time to believe them. You know what I mean? Because every time that you try to get them out, it just get more crazy. You know, it just get more and more crazy. I really don't believe at this point that they really believe that they can stop this crisis. You should hear our what is she? She's the police commissioner. She's not even from here, and when she came here to Philadelphia, I think she got Oregon somewhere. She didn't come to talk to nobody from the community. She went straight in this. Start politicking over here. Like, you know, I don't care nothing about the community. You don't even know what happens here. You have no idea, no clue. You know, so now the police are leaving, this, that, and the other. People scared. They don't know what's going to happen. There's been so many murders. like every day. Every day. People getting shot, sweeping outside, cleaning up. A lady got shot last night coming from work. So she got shot in her leg, coming from work. Come on, man. I mean,
That's happening around the. It's happening. Massachusetts is getting really bad too, as far as innocent people in the streets being shot in crossfire. But a lot of this crime is escalating, and I don't know if it's intentional or if it's. I mean, it's intentional.
It's intentional.
But I don't know. That's what I was wondering.
You know why? Because when you take a look at the various states and the attorneys general and the district attorneys, and they voluntarily raise the bar of felonies, for example, from the stealing of $100, which used to be, I guess, a Class A felony, and they raise it to $950, what do you think is going to happen?
More.
You're going to have flash mobs, grab and grab. Yeah. And they'll go inside any store, a luxury store, or a supermarket, a donut shop, and they'll just go in there with a bag and fill up the bag and walk out. Literally just walk out with the security guards doing nothing. Of course it's intentional. You cannot tell me that these politicians are just stupid, because that goes beyond stupidity.
Really? And a lot of that smash and grab is happening all over the country, too, more and more. And lot of them are young. A lot of them are young kids, too.
Yeah, they say California getting so bad now. You know, they killed the guy from Philly, PMB Brock. They killed him. And, you know, they say California's so bad, people from California moving out. They say that everybody getting robbed. They only want they getting robbed right on Rodeo. Is it called Rodeo Drive? You know, I've never been out there, so I don't know. But you know, that's what reports I'm hearing. So like, you know, it's a time for us, you know, to go back down. We have to understand, like, you know, we understand, you know, adults and teenagers need help. But they're the ones who are influencing these up-and-comers, you know. They're the ones who influence the new people, the young folks. They're introducing them to a world that they don't even need to be introduced to. So, like, that's the world that we have to go down to, and we have to be the most concerned about, and what we need to turn around. And I'll tell you what's so funny, right? So they've been turning me down about my after-school program for kids, right, to teach them, you know, architecture, engineering, you know, how to be an engineer, right? But this is from the third grade up, right? But from the third or fourth grade, they're allowed to tell me how many of my kids gonna go to jail. But I can't teach them nothing. But they can tell me how many of my kids gonna go to jail by the third grade or fourth grade. You know, they taking numbers to tell me how many people going to end up in jail, and they taking them numbers from the third or fourth grade. But I can't teach them how to be engineers doing it, and that burns me up. So, like, I'm over here fighting them for that, too. We're fighting for our learning center, you know what I mean, so that we can teach people something other than what they're being taught in school today, you know what I mean? Because what they're being taught, you know, is not all accurate, like I said.
You know what I see happening too is it's all paper. Everything in school today and college is all paper. They don't give hands-on, like, for these kids that are going to school for some vocation. They don't give them hands-on work anymore. You know, we have ghettos. We have places in the city that are so dilapidated and all these things. And they should allow these kids, these students to go out with their professors, to go to these places that are falling apart and renovate them and have that hands-on. It gives them a good feeling. At the same time, it lets them vent. Whatever's inside of them, the frustration, comes out as they're doing the work, because their mind is focused on what they're doing. They're enjoying it, and it's going to help them in the future. These are ways. Everything's becoming paper now.
and it makes them become a human being. It shows them what gratitude is. Saying good morning to somebody, saying good evening, all that. They lost their mannerisms. They don't have no manners. They don't even know what manners are. You know what I mean? It is reckless. You know what I mean? It is reckless. You know, so we have to do what we got to do. You know what I mean? And that's probably denying ourselves a lot of things that we got to do. I mean, if we say we want to help and we want to make this right, then we got to stand up. Stop sitting around in this wishing. Like my cousin live up there in Connecticut, and probably like 2 months ago, my younger cousin and him got into a fight or something, right? And this security guard watched it, supposed to be friends with my cousin, watched these people come up and shoot my cousin, right? Yeah, and this is the kind of people that we're talking about. You know what I mean? This is the kind of hatred that we're getting in our communities. For what? For what? And this is what we have to combat. We can't get nobody else to come in our community to help us. We got to help our own community. We got to say, you know what? You know, it's time for everybody to be in the house at a certain time. You know, people need to start obeying by responsibilities and rules. If you don't need to be outside past 11, why are you out here? Why are you out here? It's like them kids.
Well, yeah, you reflect the kind of philosophy that I have, in which I always blame the parents. The parents have the responsibility of rearing the kids, of telling the kids what to do and how to show them how to act. Now, you mentioned 11 p.m. Sure. I mean, 10 p.m., 9 p.m., whatever the curfew time is. But they don't do it. So that's why I blame the parents. The parents should say, hey, Bobby, after school, you do your homework. When you finish your homework and you show it to me, then you can go outside. And then after you go outside, you better be home by 6 p.m. for dinner, maybe, or 7, 8, or 9 p.m., and that's it. But they don't do it. And that's the question I always have. How has that happened? Why does that happen? That's what I'd like to know.
And why are these kids out in the street at 2 and 3 in the morning, and fights going on and getting shot down? And what are they doing outside their home at that time of the morning? It doesn't make sense.
No, because some of them don't have nowhere to go. Some of them don't.
They should be home.
No, they don't have no home.
3 o'clock in the morning.
They're homeless.
Oh, they don't have a home?
Yeah, they're homeless.
That's why I say the homeless. Homeless shelters need to, they not only give them a roof over their head, but during the day, try to help them to find something more permanent, jobs, housing, whatever the case may be.
They're not going to do that. They're not equipped to do that. They keep on saying that they're going to do it. They keep on saying they're going to help people. But what's the end result? What do you keep seeing?
But what are our taxpayers' dollars going into giving them a roof over their head at night? And letting them go out in the morning and have their homeless shelters empty all day long while these people in the street are either doing their drugs or alcohol and, again, being denied to go back in because they've been drinking. How are they going to benefit homelessness if they don't do anything during the day?
They don't care.
And that's what we need. That's where we need to start pushing them to do more in these homeless shelters.
No, you can't push no homeless shelter to do nothing more than what they're doing. What you have to do is open your own homeless shelter and then do your thing from there. Like, we got to stop pawning off everything on somebody else. But somebody else ain't doing the work. And they showing you they ain't not doing the work. They don't
want to do it. But it gets back to the funding. They're getting funding and they're doing nothing.
It doesn't matter because the funding is always going to go to them because they're connected to some kind of church entity. So like, as long as they're set, they're fine. You know what I mean? Because they can just hold prayer services, do a little feeding, and then, you know, at nighttime, they let people stay there. That's it. That's all they're required to do.
It's a shame.
So it's up to us. If you want something to change, right, and I've been knowing this, like, you got to do it yourself. You got to do it with like-minded people who want to do it. You know what I mean? And then you got to take it one step at a time. You know what I mean?
And then And even then, you're going to find opposition from the government, because the government not only does not care, I believe they have, they have an agenda to divide America amongst all kinds of lines, sexual, men versus women, black versus white, Indians versus Caucasian, Hispanic versus their own Hispanic, all of them. I believe the government is an enemy. As a matter of fact, years and years, but probably hundreds of years ago, philosophers were saying that governments are only there not to protect or to help the people, but only to stay in power. And I believe it.
And they're right. You're right. I mean, what else are they doing? They letting corruption run crazy. They letting drugs. I don't know if you know about Kensington, right? So like
about where?
Kensington. In Kensington, up where I live at. So it's an open air drug market where you can get high in front of the police. You won't go to jail. They got police. They got a University of Penn Hospital out here, right? Giving out food and whatever else they doing, right? Whatever else they doing, giving them people dope to get high. They sit right there in front of the cops and get high, man. Sit right directly in front of the cops and shoot in their neck, shoot in their arm. Had dope all in their hands. Like, and then we call this Philadelphia. We call this a place where you can come to. Let me tell you something, brother. I never seen when somebody dropped a rotten apple in a barrel of apples, I never seen none of them apples come back out good. All of them got rotten. All of them was rotten.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So like for our mayor, the governor, they let this go on. Cause they've been down here quite a few times, right? For them to let this go on is a travesty. A travesty. I mean, seriously, bro. They're out in the street, high as a kite, with needles stuck in their neck, big abscesses all up and down their leg. They still shooting dope right in front of the cops. And that's the biggest thing, right in front of the cops.
Well, I believe it. Yeah, the cops were told 2 years ago when they had the riots in Portland and Seattle and Black Lives Matter and Antifa, they were told to stand down, and they did. They let their precincts, their own precincts, their houses, right, where they went to work, they let them burn down because they followed the orders of the mayors. What did the mayors do? I know in New York City, when I was reading about what happened over there, those cops, they were told to stand down, and look what happened to them. The mayor, I think it was de Blasio at the time, he started an investigation into why the cops stood down, and the cops got a reprimand. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me about the cops.
our DA the same way.
I believe it.
We are running out of time. Gerald, do you want to give your information to the audience before we close?
Yeah, my
I have no info. Oh, you mean Gerald? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
you said Joe.
My address is Bridges, the number 4change, @gmail.com. And hopefully I can bring Dr. Palmer over here and he can help. Help guide us in some kind of way how to move forward. We all need some help. We all clamoring from different positions, man. We need to get together, and just start it somewhere, and just have an infectious disease sprout. You know, after it goes up, not in a bad way. Now, don't take this in a bad way, but hopefully. We can get up and start spreading like the COVID. We're bringing energy and life instead of bringing death to our situation. Because, like, we're all hurting. We all want some answers. We all want some solutions. It's not going to be too good for us if we keep on trying to fight these people and call them out. That doesn't work. I just think by just showing, just by standing up and showing them, like, we don't really need you to get done what we need to get done and get it done, I think we'll be okay. I really do.
You're right. I think we really do need to come together. I'm sorry, Joe. Go ahead.
I was going to recommend the Hope Collection. Go to the Hope Collection. Yeah. You want to tell them about Leona? I forget. There's another one, too. I forget. YouServe, I think, is YouServe.org. And you can go there, Gerald, and you can get volunteers, because that's what their organization is about. They offer volunteers. They offer resources for free for people who need them.
Okay, so, I need all of that. I'm a little, like, I'm not a little handy. Like, I meant to tell y'all, like, I have something called sarcoidosis, so sometimes I'll be bent down like the day I'm bent down. I'm laying across my bed. I can't really move, but I wanted to get on to say this little piece I had to say. But, you know, I have a very bad disease, and I'm trying to find some answers for it. So, you know what I mean?
Well, they
so,
may help.
Yeah, I'm praying.
So it's called thehopecollection.org or .com. I forget which dot it is, but it doesn't
the
matter.
The Hope Organization?
Yeah. No, The Hope Collection.
Collection?
Right. Thehopecollection.com.
Okay.
And there's another one which is the same. Uh-huh. Sorry.
You serve, right?
Can't hear you.
You serve.
Yeah, youserve.org.
YouServe is the next one, right?
Yeah, YouServe, and it's spelled out. It's Y-O-U. It's not a U. It's YouServe.org.
Okay.
And they have the same thing. They have resources there that they offer for free. So you can contact them, find out what they have, and they'll if they have it, they'll help you out. YouServe, they and their website, they say that they serve 1,000 meals a day.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's 200,000 meals a year. Wow.
Yeah.
They give a 500,000 meals out a year. That's astounding.
Yeah, that's what they say. Not 100, 1,000. Yeah. So if you go to both of them, if they can't help you, then they should recommend some place that does.
We are really out of time now. So if you can, Gerald, I will, Joe, you're coming back on anyway, Joe, we can get that information and I can give it to, I can exchange the information between the two of you.
Okay. But don't forget to call Dr. Carmen Leona.
I want to thank everybody for coming on. I want to thank the audience for listening, and we will tune in next. I think, Gerald, you're coming back on on October 5th at 12 o'clock Eastern Time. So everyone tune in to Gerald Bowling, Bridges for Change, on October 5th from 12 o'clock Eastern Time to 1:30. Thank you so much. Thank you, Joe, for coming on. I really appreciate both of you. And we are now going to end this episode.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Take care now.